Hello and welcome to the Utah Puck Report. Jay Stevens here, and Gary, you're back.
I'm actually here for once.
You're so busy, man.
This is crazy. Yeah.
You know, I used to think I was busy, but now you're in the world of not only do you have a full-time job where you're, you know, you have demands for your time, but now you're fully involved in the world of travel team hockey.
Yeah. I mean, two kids, and then you help coach.
Oof. Oof.
As Kevin.
Just don't get your life back. Yeah, and I guess that brings us right to our guest. And again, when Gary and I were talking about, hey, we need to do a hockey podcast, and KSL was like, well, what would you even do? And they had me write a list of people that I'd have on.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like Trevor Lewis. And then I think like three or four on the list was Kevin Guy. I'm like, he lives here, and he's a huge resource when it comes to hockey.
Right.
And it's taken us five seasons. And that's my fault.
Shame on you.
I know. So, Kevin Guy, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I'm sure for most of our listeners are diehard fans of the Salt Lake Golden Eagles and then the Utah Grizzlies and Utah hockey in general. Yeah. And so I think I could just say, hey, Kevin Guy is in here, and 90% of the people would know you and know your playing history. But I want to talk about it a little bit. I want you to talk about it. Like, you're one of the guys, like, when I was first getting into hockey. So I don't want to sound like a fanboy here, because I consider you a friend, but you probably don't know how much, like, your team and you guys influenced me wanting to play hockey, because you guys were the first I ever saw. And it was, like, amazing to watch you guys play hockey. So when you were the real Golden Eagles, like, when you guys were legitimately the best teams around. So before we get to that, will you start us back, like, where you grew up and how you discovered hockey?
So I'm from Edmonton, Alberta, up in Canada, and pretty much I think I was skating before I went to school. Like, I remember going to outdoor, we had two outdoor rinks within walking distance of my home growing up, and I'd go to the hockey rink with my dad, and my brothers were in school, and they'd come out and see me at recess. So I know I was younger than going to school. So it was probably like 3 or 4 or 5 years old, and I was out there skating and just did that, loved it, and did it every day you could. And it didn't cost a whole lot of money in Canada, because the outdoor rinks, you just paid a monthly fee and you go skate whenever you wanted. Wow. As long as the ice is available.
That would be a nice setup to have.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah, for kids nowadays, it's really, you couldn't do that, but in Canada you get frozen ice, what, 6 months of the year, so
right.
It's pretty easy.
Yeah. So you're playing, you know you love it, and at what point do you realize, I'm going to pursue this, and like, does that click in your head at some point where you're like, hey, I want to not just play here, I want to play at a higher competition?
Yeah, growing up, I had two older brothers. They both played, my middle brother, he played with the Bennings, with Jim Benning, and I played with Brian Benning, and like Bennings, they played in the NHL for quite a while.
Yep.
And there was another Benning, Mark Benning, and they were really good players, and we were like neighbors with them, and so it was like the Guy boys and the Benning boys. And my oldest brother was playing Great Falls Americans back in the day when they had a team, and he got hurt at 18 years old in a car accident, and that kind of ended it. It was like, you're 18, you get drafted, or you know, it's kind of like you hope for the best, but that car accident kind of put him out. But he really helped me. I was 15, and he helped me train and prepare to get my high school done in 2.5 years, things like that, just to play. And I always had, you know, my friends and their parents would always say, oh, you know, are you going to school or this or that, going to college? And I just always had it in my mind. It was like, I'm going to play hockey. And they're like, well, what if it doesn't work out? And that didn't even register to me. Like, it never did. When I was a little kid, I remember watching NHL Saturday night hockey in Canada, and just called it Hockey Night in Canada. And it was like, I'd sit there and watch that, and it'd be like, that's what I'm going to do. And it was just like, it wasn't an option, really. It was just something that I did. And I always thought I'd play until someone says I can't.
Yeah.
You know, so that was my goal, you know, and it was just so much fun to me that it didn't feel like a job or work or anything. It was just, that's what I wanted to do.
So what point are you, I mean, you go straight to juniors, like, you play high school there, or you play, like, I don't know how it works in Edmonton.
They play, you have, in Edmonton, when I grew up, we had four different like double A organizations. Okay. And so it was A, double A, and it's depending on what side of the city you lived on or what corner of the city kind of thing you lived on. And that's the organization you played for.
Oh, okay.
And then you'd have to just make that team. And so from that, I think I was 13 years old. The Western Hockey League, Medicine Hat Tigers, came and approached my parents and stuff and talked to me and said they were starting to watch me when I was 13. And they watched me all the way up. And then when I was 16, they, Sherwood Park, another junior team that was one less than WHL. They wanted me to play at 16, and I decided to stay in midget hockey one more year, and it was a good decision at that. We ended up going to the Air Canada Cup, which is the national championship for the midgets for Alberta. We represented Alberta that year, so wow. That was kind of cool. That was the biggest thing I did at that age.
Like, yeah, I bet.
They give you all your equipment and matching stuff and you know, helmets, gloves, stick, pants, everything. They give it to you for the tournament. It's pretty cool.
That's when you know you've made it.
Yeah, you're 16 years old and you made it.
Got a free stick, free helmet.
Yeah.
All right, so, and then Medicine Hat.
Did you win, though?
No, didn't win. Made the All-Star team.
Awesome.
you figure the whole Canada, you know, you're like, all these kids are pretty darn good.
Right.
A lot of NHL players came out of that, and, you know, so it was kind of cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And that's got to be the case, like, every year. Like, when you go back and watch those, and I was lucky enough, I watched a Shattuck St. Mary's tournament, 15 years ago or something when I was a stick rep. And I went back there and just watched all these midgets, these AAA midgets playing against each other. It was like Team Illinois versus Shattuck when they were in the top, right? And I'm looking later at the names that are on that game program. Well, I just moved. This just happened last year. And I'm moving and I find a game program from that tournament. And it's like Patrick Kane and Jonathan Taves, and I'm like, some of the biggest names in the NHL played in that tournament that weekend, and it's just crazy. And that has to be like kind of the same thing you were going through at that time. Like,
oh yeah, like you figure that was the top kids in the country,
yeah,
you know, like in all of Canada,
top 16 year olds,
yeah, 15 and 16 year olds.
Jeez. Yeah.
So that was and then Medicine Hat, I went there, played there 17, 18, and 19, and that was a good experience. The first couple years had decent coaching. The last year, the coach kind of, it was a new coach they brought in, and he, for some reason, I had a bad shoulder that needed repair, and the manager asked me to play half a season because we had a bunch of young rookies coming in. He said, can you play till Christmas? We'll fix your shoulder. You'll be back for playoffs. And I agreed to it. And so as soon as Christmas comes around, the doctor from the Calgary Flames, could have been drafted by then, the doctor from the Calgary Flames comes in the locker room after a game in Calgary one time, and he checks me out, and he starts moving my arm around and stuff. He just says, he goes, you're not playing anymore. You're done. And because they own you, basically.
Right.
Yeah. Oh. And so that ticked the coach off. So that was, he didn't get along with the coach after that for the rest of that year, because I had to get my shoulder fixed. And I, you know, I was a young, dumb kid. I would have just played.
Right.
You know? You can't move your arm. You just play. Yeah. That's what you're doing.
It's funny because we were talking about that before we went on the air. We're just like, we're old and we're all banged up. Like, we know the storms are coming well before the weathermen because all the arthritis flares up.
Yeah.
We skipped a beat there, though, because I want to talk to you a little bit about playing in the dub and, like, knowing you're going to get drafted and also just figuring out what your role was as a player. Like, all right, when you were a kid, you just play hockey, and you're a defenseman. You just play defense. But when you get into juniors, you're like, all right, what role as a defenseman am I going to play? Am I going to be physical? Am I going to be stay home? Am I going to, you know, like, how does that come about? Does the coach decide that for you at this point, or are you just follow your natural instincts?
For me, I've always had a real knack for seeing the game. I could watch, like, I don't know if you'd say like the quarterback in football or something like that, but I could see what's happening on the ice and see what's going to happen. And in having that ability, I could put myself in the right position.
Yeah.
And I was big enough and strong enough. I could play physical if I had to. I didn't have the personality to be mean, but if the time came to use most of my fights ever I had professionally or juniors, it was always sticking up for my teammate. It was hardly ever for myself.
Right.
You know, if someone did something to me, I just dealt with it. But if somebody hurt my teammate, then it was time to step in type thing. But,
yeah,
you know, the defensive role, I've always just, it was like my thought was to protect my goalie and don't get scored on.
Oh.
But if I do that, we win. Because somebody's going to score a goal, because you usually have enough talent on your team where you're going to score a goal. But if you can stop the other best players, you should win your game.
Right.
So that was my mentality. And so I always played defensive. I was a penalty killer. You know, I'd get maybe 3 or 4 goals a season, max.
I'm looking at your stats right now. Yeah. So that your best year at junior is 72 games played, 15 goals, 42 assists, 117 penalty minutes.
Yeah.
So that's not bad. Like,
not bad.
Yeah.
That back when juniors was tough, though, that was like there was a lot of fights back then.
There's not a plus minus on this, though.
No, there
they
was.
Not keep them, but...
They didn't keep them back then. We kind of kept them ourselves. Jumping in the first year of minor leagues in Moncton, New Brunswick, started that season off. And by Christmas, I think, or just after Christmas, I was plus 32.
Jeez.
You know, how like that's
unheard
just,
of.
Yeah. So here I'm a guy that scores 1 or 2 goals. And I think that year I got player of the month like 2 or 3 times, in the league. So that's, I guess there's different aspects. A lot of, like everyone likes to see goals,
right.
But the goalies and general managers don't want to get scored against.
Right.
If the people recognize that and see that, then you get an opportunity to play.
Well, and that's the thing. As a fan, yeah, you want to see goals. But as a hockey player or a hockey coach, you go and you watch the systems and you really learn to appreciate it. And that's one of the things I was talking about being a fan of yours is, I would go with guys that understood the game. I was brand new to the game. And I would go with some guys around here that understood the game. Maybe not to the best level, but they would be like, hey, this is what you need to watch. You need to watch your goalie. You had Mazzotti, I think, that year, or...
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. No, it wasn't.
The Russian kid, too. We had Mazzotti and Shaky DeMore, Mark DeMore.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We won the Turner Cup.
Yeah. So, and you guys had really good goalies, and that's what they were like, hey, watch. If I was going to be a goalie, I decided at that point. I still hadn't been on skates yet, but I'm like a freshman, I think.
Smart.
Yeah, and I'm like, I'm going
to
be a goalie.
That's pretty hard to do.
Yeah. Well, I had used a baseball glove, and I figured I can catch some stuff. And so, they were like, watch this guy, watch Kevin Guy. And that's what I was told, watch Kevin Guy, watch how he plays the game. And they kept talking about just being smart and, making the right plays, doing the right thing, and sticking up for your teammates. And that was kind of like you to a T, like you were the guy that everybody else was saying, be like that guy.
Yeah, I've always played like that. I remember when I was real little, I played center ice and, I remember scoring, 10 goals in one game when I was a real little kid and coming off the ice and my dad told me I had a bad game. I didn't understand that,
Yeah.
And then you kind of figure out, okay, there's more to it than just one guy and there's more to it than just, like, that's what's great about hockey. It's a team thing and every guy has a job to do. And if everyone does their job, you have a lot of success.
Yeah. And that's
so true.
Yeah, that's the other part of it. Sometimes you'll just sit down and watch somebody that sees the game like that too.
Yeah.
I've been privileged enough to sit like next to JP Parisi and watch him break down a game. And I'm like, I don't even know. Like, are we watching the same game? Like the things he's seeing. And I'm trying to remember the guy's name. There was another rep when we were at Warrior. Not Cunningham. I have to look him up. But he'd watch the game and he'd be like, that guy's using the wrong kerf or the lie on a stick's wrong. This move that he always does, like he pulls it off the boards or whatever, he's not going to be able to pull that off. Like, because he switched sticks today for some reason. It's just amazing that some people can see the game at that level. Yeah. It's like how, like Prince and the major musicians see music in numbers and colors. And the rest of us are just like, oh, that's a cool drum beat.
It's true. Like you look at the great one, Gretzky. It was like, I remember playing him and I thought I knew the game, and I'd be playing against him and he's on the ice and all of a sudden he takes off the center ice. And I'm like, where the heck is he going? I'm watching the game. I'm like, I'm in the game. I'm playing. I'm like, where's he going? I figure he knows more than me. I'm following him, and sure enough, puck ends up on a stick.
Yeah.
And it's like, I did not see it coming.
Yeah.
And he knew exactly what was going on, and he was that much ahead of everybody. I think that's why the guy was so successful. He just he knew the game.
Oh, yeah.
He knew what was happening.
Yeah, and that's crazy too. And that's another thing that some of these people around here need to understand is you were playing, you were with Calgary, you were with Vancouver and Calgary.
And Calgary, yep.
And you're playing against like the real battle for Alberta. We talk about it now with Trevor being in Calgary and stuff. It's fun. But when it's Gretzky and Messier and Fuhr.
Yeah.
And you're out there trying to stop those guys.
Yeah. Yeah. I was, I remember one time in Calgary, we were in Edmonton playing, and that was back when, Dave Brown played for Edmonton. He was their tough guy.
Yeah.
And Messier gave somebody a cheap shot. So I got Messier in the corner and gave him a shot and whistle blows. We line up at the faceoff. And I always skated with the Edmonton guys in the summer because I'm from Edmonton.
Right.
So I'd skate with them. They're all good guys. And Dave Brown, he just comes up to me on the faceoff and he, Kevin, settle down. Just a comment like that, and I go, yes, sir.
Message heard, yeah. Yeah. Message understood.
Yeah.
Let's jump back to Medicine Hat a little bit. When do you know you're going to get drafted?
You don't. That's a cool experience. I remember I was from in Edmonton. I was in school, you know, drafts after the season's over. And I remember being in high school, and I stayed home from high school that day and just listened, you know, and it was like waiting, and you just hope your name comes up. And so when it came up, I was pretty excited. It was a big deal.
So you knew you had a good year.
Yeah.
And had any of the teams told you that they were looking at you?
No, I don't think anyone ever talked to me.
Oh.
No, literally, I just sat at home. And
that's so weird, because nowadays it's like, hey, we're thinking about drafting you, so now you need to take this 84-page psychological profile. Yeah. We need to see, like, we need to make sure your heart's in good shape and how your lungs are. We need a family history of, you know, to make sure you don't have any diabetes or, you know.
Yeah.
Nowadays, it's pretty crazy how crazy they get with it. And I don't think they have any more success than they did back then, honestly.
Well, like, yeah, I think about it. When I was probably the first era that they started to make guys come to training camp in shape.
Yeah.
Before me, guys went to training camp to get in shape.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, they were, you know, a lot of them, like a lot of hockey players drink a lot of beer and stuff, and they get to camp and it's like, okay, let's get in shape. Now when I started going to camps, it was, you know, you're on the bike, they're checking your oxygen levels. They're checking, like, you know, after I got drafted, they were pulling me down there in the summertime and checking me in the summertime to see how, you know, how my oxygen levels were and, you know, your strength tests and push-ups, sit-ups, pull-ups, all those kind of things. But, you know, 5-10 years before that, there was nothing like that. It was just show up and play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny because I thought I knew guys were getting maybe I had no concept of what in shape was anyway, but I thought guys were starting to take it a little more serious. And this is about the time where I'm getting out of Utah and seeing some stuff, and I'm showing up places, and some of the guys show up ready to play. And those are the guys usually that aren't officially on the team yet, right? Whether it was junior college or whether it was juniors, and I played crappy junior leagues, but still guys were like desperate to play. And so those guys would show up in shape. And then the rest of them would just be like, I'm already on the team, so I'm just going to get in shape in camp. And then I remember like my first training camp with the Idaho Steelheads, and most of the guys were like, they're drafted by Dallas, I'm going to be in good shape, I want to be on this team. And then the four Russians show up and they're out of shape, and you get off the ice the first time, you know, you're on the ice for 45 minutes, they do an ice make, and then all the Russians put on their skate guards and step outside and have a smoke. And, you know, and like the first thing they're like, where did I get my smokes in my beer? You know, like, and I'm like, man, this is just different. And then nowadays, like, because now for a while I had the privilege, I guess you could call it, of being the one step up from the shooter tutor. Or maybe they just couldn't afford a shooter tutor and I'm free. Right. But like I would train with like Zach Parise, Jordan Parise would be the other goalie. And then doing that, there were other NHL guys, Drew Stafford. But there were some big names that would come out and I'd get to go with them. And they would do things that seemed unhuman to me. On like, we'd skate and I'm dead tired. We skated for an hour and a half, and then they'd zam the ice and they would just do like lightning, like, or ladders back and forth, and then they'd go get on the short ice. And it was crazy the amount of conditioning that was all of a sudden part of the game.
Yeah, it was. You think about it though, you do something, if you do anything 7 days a week, you know,
right.
and you do it for an hour and a half, couple hours a day, and then you do additional training on top of that, you just can't help but being shit. I remember, like, even just playing for the Golden Eagles back in the day when we won the Turner Cup, we had 3 days off at Christmas, I think it was.
Yeah.
And that's, like, you come back, you felt like you've been off for 2 months because your body just gets used to working every
yeah.
day.
Yeah.
And your body just does it. You don't have to think about it.
Yeah, I'll have to take your word. I've never been there.
But it's like golf, you know? You go out and you get mad because you stink, but do you sit and practice every single day like the pros? No.
Right.
That's what I try to tell people all the time.
Yeah. Anything you do, like you think of, what is it, a pro, 10,000 hours? Something
yeah.
like that. To in your lifetime, to get to that level,
yeah.
10,000 hours.
To get there.
To get there.
I have too many kids for that.
Yeah.
And you do too. Yeah.
So you get drafted by Calgary. You go to Moncton first?
As a farm team, yeah, Moncton, New Brunswick.
Yeah, and then you get told you're going to Salt Lake.
Yeah, they moved their farm team to Salt Lake.
Tell me, what did you know about Salt Lake at that time, being from Edmonton? Have you ever heard of Salt Lake?
Just drove through going to Disneyland when I was a kid.
Yeah.
That was about it, and that Mormons live there.
Yeah,
that's about it.
So, were you like, oh no, I'm going to Mormonville, or was it just like, hey, this is just another town? That's not weird.
No, I was actually pretty excited because Moncton was far. Like from I got called up from Moncton a couple times, and you fly, 5 hours to get to Calgary.
Yeah,
where Salt Lake, you're an hour and a half, 2 hours. You're there. So I was looking forward to it, and the city just seemed a lot nicer, too. There's not a whole lot out in Moncton, New Brunswick. So.
Right.
So a lot of snow, and that was about it. And the league was going to be different. Yeah, so I was excited to go.
Yeah.
It was kind of a little bit of a letdown, though, the first time coming to Salt Lake, because I just got called up from Moncton the year before, played with the Flames. I was, like, playing with Al McGinnis. He's my partner and stuff. And,
wow.
You know, and so you're... you're getting to play in the NHL, and there you do really well. Like I think I was probably like about plus 14 or 15 already in just a few games, like just, good plus minus stats yeah. as a defenseman. And they happened to draft the first round draft pick defenseman.
Oh,
that was their draft pick that year. He was 6'4", 245, and he had to play.
Right.
It wasn't a question. And I was the low guy on the totem pole. So I got sent down, having a good training camp, and got sent down. So I was a little bit bummed out.
Right.
But that's when I decided that, I got to play for myself. I just got to play hard, because you can't count on things that you can't control.
Yeah.
If a coach might not like you or whatever, or, they might, short shift you on some ice time or whatever. As long as you can play for yourself and work your hardest, I think you can deal with that kind of stuff. But if you're not putting in your 100% and it's your fault, then that's a little tougher to deal with, I think.
You were having those thoughts then? I mean, that's pretty mature. It seems like more, like, I don't know, I would just be, I just seems like to me it's a whirlwind. Like,
oh, yeah.
I have no rational thoughts at that age, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
so
yeah, I remember going into the general manager's office when they were sending me down.
Yeah.
And I was, I just told him, I go, I had a good camp. I go, this doesn't make sense, and I'll go down and play, but I go, this makes no sense.
Right.
And when you go to the locker room, and I got called up, I think, when we were that year for the Golden Eagle, I think I got called up like 5 or 6 times. They'd call me up for a weekend and call me up for a game, send me back and back and forth and back and forth. And I'd get up there, and the kid that took my spot, he'd be in the locker room, and he just came up to me and he goes, I can't play this. He goes, this is too fast.
Oh, wow.
But, you got all the scouts, you got all the people involved that picked him.
Yeah.
And who answers to that? So... He has to play.
Right.
Otherwise, they don't look very smart.
Yeah. So. I think now they get it a little bit more. Now they yeah. give somebody a chance. We were talking about that before. We know of other players that maybe weren't ready for the NHL when they got put in the NHL. And they're big. And
yeah.
you can't, I don't know, like you grow into your body, right?
Yeah.
And maybe you grow into the speed of the NHL, or maybe you don't. Maybe you're just...
Oh, it's hard. That speed is fast.
Yeah,
and you're 18 years old. That is tough.
And there, if you're already that big, hopefully you can grow into it, or hopefully you can catch up. But there's that X factor where maybe you're just not good enough.
Yeah.
And some guys don't find that out, and you don't find that out until you play it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No matter how well you did before in the minors or
yeah, it's
college.
A lot. It's a lot faster. The guys are stronger, and the game's just fast.
Yeah,
really fast.
It's so cool to even now, like when the game came here, the NHL games come here, and I use my press pass so that I can just go stand right next to the glass. Yeah. Right, it's like the biggest perk I have for this job is that game once a year. But I'll go and I just stand there and I'm like, I think I at some point I was good at hockey until I watch just one guy. Yeah. Like the guy that's barely going to make the club. Anybody that's in the NHL is so fast.
Huge. Yeah,
it's
I agree.
So talented.
Yeah. Now, especially nowadays, like they're all just so good. They're also, their skating ability is incredible.
Yeah.
Like it's just crazy how good they are.
The Cal Makar, man, the stuff that guy's pulling off, it's unbelievable. It defies physics and it's like if we could have done it, why weren't we doing it a long time ago? Like, how are these guys reinventing the game that's been around for 200 years? And
well, I think a lot of it, like I look at the kids I coach right now with the junior Grizz, you know, 17, 18 year olds, and I got kids on there that can handle the puck better than I ever dreamt of.
Yeah.
And they were given the opportunity. You think back to when I played, you weren't allowed to do that. If you did some move and that was crazy, and even if it worked, the coach would probably bench you.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, because you were skate, hit, shoot, score, fight. That was basically hockey. It was like move the puck, get it up the ice, and if someone's ahead of you, give it to them. And if you got to burn somebody one-on-one, that's not happening. You move it around or you dump it in the corner.
Right.
You do not lose that puck ever.
Yeah.
If you lose that puck once, you're on the bench.
Yeah, that's
you know, kids nowadays, crazy, yeah. You know, I learn watching these kids now and coaching these kids the last 12 years, whatever I've been doing, they're just incredible to watch. And sure, they're going to mess up. You know, they're going to make mistakes. But as long as the effort's there, I'm okay with mistakes, you know.
Right.
Because they're going to learn from them and they're going to get better and better and better. And it's fun to watch them. Like, it's really fun. These kids are growing up and they're
and
it's amazing the things
they're all trying the Michigan.
Yeah.
And now I have a player now that I play against that will come down and do the Michigan coming straight at you. Not from behind the net. He'll just pick it up and whip it at you.
Yeah.
And that's that's there unreal.
It is. It's unreal. Yeah.
And like you were saying before, even if the coach didn't, like if you tried something like that in your era, you're probably going to be eating somebody's stick. Like,
oh, yeah. Somebody's
going to beat you up for showboating like that.
For sure. Yeah.
Multiple people.
Multiple
probably.
People.
Yeah. Right. And I try to explain that to some people. Like, you know, I'm trying to teach firemen about hockey, and I'm like, well, because they're like, well, what about these fights and this? I'm like, well, okay, like 10 years ago, there was these there were these unspoken rules, and now they've kind of changed a little bit. But it's cool to see how amazing hockey is now. Back to when you get to Salt Lake, though, and I know it sucks not being in the show, but the team that you were put on here, the team that Calgary had here. You talk a little bit about those guys and what kind of what you were seeing here in Salt Lake as far as like, you guys were unreal.
Yeah, it was, I remember that season. That was probably one of my funnest seasons ever, playing hockey. We had, you know, 18, 19 guys on the team that were just everyone. I think we only had two married guys at the time. And so you got a bunch of guys that are
shenanigans.
Yeah. You're making money and you're playing and you're having fun. Paul Baxter was our coach. I think it was his first year. He was my partner up in Calgary.
Oh, wow.
And now he's
cool.
My coach,
right.
You know, the next year. And so, you know, he was a good guy, kind of crazy, but he was a good guy. And he would, literally he'd come up and ask me sometimes, what do you want to do today? What are we doing for practice? You know, stuff like that.
Oh, that's cool.
And it was, you know, so the guys we had though, boy, we had probably 5 to 6 tough NHL guys on our team because they were all young still.
Yeah.
And like they were tough NHL guys. And, you know, Stu Grimson, you know, Bob Bodak, Ken Saverin.
Was
we had
Paul Crews here that year?
Paul Crews was there. Kerry Clark.
Oh, yeah.
Darren Banks.
Oh. Banks had like 350 penalty minutes in 50 games or something, right?
Yeah. Martin Simard.
Oh, yeah.
Like these guys were tough kids.
Wow.
You know, it was like I just remember playing and it was like I think we started out that season with 10 losses. First 9 or 10 games, we were like 0-1-9 or something, or 0-10, or it was pretty bad. And I remember getting called back up to Calgary for a weekend to play, and all the guys up there, because they were worried about Paul Baxter being the coach and stuff, and you know, it's his first year, and they go, "What's wrong with you guys?" And I'm like, "I go, we're good. I go, good team. We just haven't put the puck in the net, you know." And Chernomaz was our captain, and and we knew he could score. We had a bunch of guys who could score. We just weren't doing it. And you know, ended up starting out 0-9 or 0-10, whatever it was, and ended up winning the Turner Cup that season. You know, just turned things around, figured it out. But just a great group of guys. And when the season ends, every season I play hockey, within 2 days, everybody's gone. Everybody goes home to wherever they're from. That team, we stayed around. I think most guys were still here probably 3 weeks after.
Oh, geez. Oh,
wow. We rented 2 houseboats, went to Lake Powell.
Yes.
You know, just had nobody wanted to go home. They didn't want it to end because no one ever gets that. You know, in hockey, it's always just a job. And you're done. Let's go home. And this was more like it was just fun. It was just fun doing it.
Yeah. And for, I said, that's my first experience of hockey.
Yeah.
And maybe I'd played that year. Maybe I was playing that year, but man, what? I'm glad you look at it that way too, because I look at it as like, that was the best hockey I've ever seen. That was the most fun I'd ever had going to games.
Yeah.
And
they were fun.
You could just see the camaraderie and the, like, the brotherhood between you guys. It was amazing.
Yeah. And I think the city itself, like, I think the booster club back then, like, they were really involved with the players.
Yeah.
Like, it was like anything you need, they take care of you. It was just really like the city stepped up for the players, and you know, and I don't know how many, there's quite a few of the people you just get to know and they become friends and stuff. And like, you don't get that with professional sports very, very often, like any of the cities I ever go to.
Right.
You know, so,
you know, it's funny. We're going to have the Utah, I've been reaching out to the Grizzlies Boosters Club because they're kind of recreating what that was back then.
That's good, yeah.
And even me, when I get pulled up to E-Bug, I get a call from the, like, they'll know I'm going on the road with the team, and they'll be like, "Hey, we're getting you a gift pack, and we're getting," and I'm like, "Don't do it for me. Like, I'm not real. Like, just give it to these kids, right? Like, the kids want it." These,
yeah.
And that's the other thing people don't realize is the kids now they're not making any money.
No.
And so they need you to give them the, like, everything that you can give them, give them 10 more bucks that they can spend on something they need. So but it's good to hear that. It was an awesome parade, right? Like, didn't we have a big parade for you guys?
Yeah, after that, it came off the airport, and everybody was at the airport, was packed. That's when you could go to the gates and that stuff at that time.
Right.
Yeah, place was packed at that time. Yeah, it was a good fan group.
There are pictures floating around at that time. Did you, Gary, were you going to games back then?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And
my dad was at KCPX back then, and we're doing all sorts of stuff.
Peter Lappin, I forgot about him. Mark D'Amore, Jim Johansson. There were some big names back then. Mark Bureau.
Yeah, Mark Bureau.
Marty Smart. I had him Smart. When I was 16, 17, I went to a camp in Sun Valley, Idaho, and he was my instructor.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he was hilarious.
He's a great guy.
Yeah, he was such a character. What other things do you remember? Just like a couple other Golden Eagles highlights.
I would think just the whole playoff season, especially that year for that team, the time we won in 87-88, it was just, you know, playing the games. It was really, really intense. They were really tough. Paul Baxter was, he really, used that, physicalness about our team. Like, I remember, boy, there was games sometimes that we had to play with, you know, 8-9 players because everyone else was kicked out in brawls and stuff. And
yeah.
I remember him chasing other coaches down the hallway in the locker rooms and stuff. And,
wow.
Yeah. He was pretty intense.
Old time hockey.
Yeah. It was really old time hockey. And like, the guys though, off the ice, the guys just stuck together. On the ice, off the ice, the guys stuck together all the time. And, you know, and I think that says a lot to when you're on the ice playing, because you might not have the talent that another team might have, but if you have the drive to just sacrifice whatever it takes to win, I think that's a big part. And I think that team we had that year, that's what the guys did.
Yeah.
And everybody did it, and they did it for each other, you know, and just not for themselves.
It's so special to be a part of something like that. And it's so hard to recreate it.
Yeah.
You think
I played 10 years professional, and that's the only time I ever got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you got it here in Utah.
Yeah.
I mean, how nuts.
So yeah, and then
that's awesome.
You kind of, I don't know exactly what happened. You ended up with the Canucks for a bit, and then you ended up back with Calgary. Did they?
Yeah, I played 3 years in Vancouver, and then just before playoff time, got traded back to Calgary. In Calgary, and then after that, Calgary traded me to. I don't know if they tried. I don't think I got traded. I actually signed with the Islanders for a couple-year contract. And then that's how I ended up in Denver with the Grizzlies.
Oh, yeah.
For the Denver Grizzlies. And then they moved back to Salt Lake after that. But the year in Denver is where I got hurt.
Yeah.
The injury put me out.
So is that the injury you were telling me about last summer or last season? That's not – is that your back injury?
Yeah, I had blew my back out, yeah.
Because there was one you told me that you're like, I just got bumped and I didn't even know I was hurt.
Yeah, it was, I didn't fall. I'm pretty sure it just had to be wear and tear. I remember Mick Vokota, big kid.
Yeah, I remember Mick. Mm-hmm.
And so he was going to hit my defense partner. So I just put my stick around his waist and then hit the brakes real hard. And just to stop his momentum from crushing my partner out on the behind the net.
Yeah.
And I could feel like a fireball go through my back, you know, and didn't think nothing of it, you know. Then later that game, just took a guy out at the blue line, took one stride, and that was it. Never played again.
Wow.
Never fell down, just kind of coasted over to the bench and
holy cow.
And hung out for a while and waited till the end of the game and then went inside and the doctors just said, no sense checking you out. We know what it is. So we'll wait 6 weeks and see if it goes away or not. And
Just ruptured discs? Or,
two discs, four and five, L4 and five. And
wow.
Yeah, so then you just, after that, it was more or less I had to get them fused eventually. Fused a year and a half
later. I always knew you had a back injury, and I asked you about it. Where were we? Not Sun Valley.
Bozeman?
Oh, yeah, we're in Bozeman, Montana.
I'm going there this year.
Gary, that's the glory of these men's league tournaments I'm trying to get you on.
That's right.
Bozeman.
Bozeman's pretty fun.
Actually, Bozeman is a blast. It's a blast.
The 12U team's going there.
Oh, it'll be a different experience than what we had.
Yeah, right.
But I was sat down and I finally get to talk to you about it. I'm like, tell me about how you got hurt. And he tells me, he's like, oh, I hooked Mick Vokota and then it was over. And I'm like, what? It's so crazy how, like, I've watched a guy. I watched a firefighter standing, making a phone call. And granted, our job's dangerous, right?
Yeah.
And he's on the phone with the hospital talking about our patient. And it's kind of an ice storm out or whatever. And he's on the phone and he's got the computer in his hand. And somebody comes up kind of beside him. And you can't talk about a patient when somebody else is around. So he turns like this. He just turns like half a step to the right and blows out his knee.
What?
Completely blew out his knee.
Wow.
Not just a little bit, but like all three ligaments gone.
What?
And I'm like, how did that happen? Like the way you can get hurt and so, like, you just can't take anything for granted.
No.
And that just blew my mind when you told me this. I came home and I told my wife, and my wife gives me the same thing all the time now, because I'll be like, oh, did you see that play? Or did you see this with that guy? Like when I have hockey on and she's reading a book, just tolerating my existence. And she'll be like, no, oh, that's nice, dear. Like, whatever, you know. And I told her that story. And she's like, yeah, I remember Mick Vokota. Didn't he always wear the leather jacket and go to – didn't we have to drive him to Sizzler a bunch? Because that's when I started e-bugging, was Mick was in town. And he'd always be like, hey, can you give me a ride to Sizzler?
Yeah.
Sizzler.
So, yeah. But at least she paid attention to that story that time.
Yeah.
So now – okay, so you got hurt and now you're a normal person and – the NHL's behind you, and you come out, and guys like me and the other guys around here are like, hey, you live here. Will you please come teach? And you didn't jump right out. Obviously, it usually takes till you have kids, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I had I got five children, and and four out of the five, it wasn't until my youngest started playing because the four older ones all swam.
Oh.
So I got into that. I was doing the officiating for swimming and things like that. And that's hockey's tough, but swimming's really tough. And especially being a parent, swimming's really tough.
Oh,
wow. You sit there for 4 hours to watch your kid swim for a minute and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of tough. At least hockey, it's going all the time.
Right.
But then my boy, I got him going, and I think he was like five or six. So I've been coaching him ever since.
Yeah.
And now he just graduated. He's 18 now. And so I've been coaching the whole time with the kids in hockey, and I really enjoy it. It's fun watching these kids.
Yeah, that part's fun.
Yeah, it's really fun.
The other parts of it are not. Like, I just kind of wonder, I don't want to throw anybody under the bus, but we all talk about, like, what can we do here? Like, we talked about it a little bit, but what can we do to make hockey better here? Like, how do we make it better for the kids here? Like, we have you and we have Greg Lieb, and we have guys that have actual knowledge. Because, I'm going to set it up just a little bit more. We were talking about, like, how kids get out of here. And you told your story, how you got out, and we have some kids here that managed to get out. And I always make them tell their story. I've made Trevor tell the story several times, and he had some ups and downs, right? But we also have people that will offer advice. And I'll say, like, same thing when you go to the gym, and you're like, hey, I know exactly what I need to do. I need to do this lift, and my trainer or the Avalanche trainer that taught me how to do this lift, and now I'm going to go do it. And then somebody next to you has no idea what you're doing, has no idea what they were doing, is going to give you advice on how you're going to lift. And that's the exact same thing that happens in hockey, I think. And I think that we get these guys that come in and they're like, hey, I learned that maybe I can make some money if I tell this kid I'm going to get him to the next level or whatever.
Yeah, in Utah, it's really different. A lot of parent involvement, which is good and bad. And I think, you know, like for every place I've ever been, I think even back east, you have organizations or areas of the cities that have organizations. And if the kid wants to play, if he lives in an area, he has to play in that organization.
Right.
And in Utah, the kids get to do what they want.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is a bad thing. It's good for the kids. They get to play with their buddies, whatever. They can all go as a group.
Yeah.
But if you want to develop hockey players and you want to get kids good enough to get out of here, you have a AAA team, and that's the AAA team. That's it. And you have two AA teams because Utah doesn't have enough players to make quality teams that can compete out of Utah. You know, we want to compete in Minnesota. We got to have real players and real organizations that can get these kids to that level.
Yeah, and right, we dilute the talent.
We dilute the talent, And, you know, then we have our high school hockey where they're, you know, you got JV kids that if they score more than 7 goals, they can't play anymore.
Yeah.
It's like, so they got all these rules that not keep people down instead of trying to bring them up. And it's in order for everyone to be inclusive. You know, everybody gets to play. Everybody gets a trophy. Well, that means nobody goes out. Nobody makes it.
You get a Utah trophy, but you're not getting one in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's I think that's the biggest downfall. Like, because when I was growing up, you had, like I was telling you before, we have 4 teams in the city of Edmonton. I don't know, 700,000 people, something like that, back when I lived there.
Yeah. Of them played hockey.
They have 4 teams, 4 AA teams. And whatever side of the city you lived on, that's the team you tried to make. If you didn't make it, you went to the B team or the A team or whatever it was.
Right, that's a great idea. I mean, that would be awesome.
You know, and you didn't get to go jump to the other side or this coach paid you to come over or whatever, you know.
Or your dad starts another organization.
Someone's not going to start a league for you or something like that. This is the options, and you can really, I think the quality of hockey can really rise because the kids are going to work to get to that level.
Yeah.
You know, and have that opportunity to play. And then usually you'll have good coaches at that level.
Right.
You know, and people who know what they're doing and how to teach the kids. And I think another aspect in Utah is really sad is a lot of these kids quit at 14, 16 years old because they get tired of getting yelled at. Mm-hmm. You know, and I remember taking my level 4 coaching, the Grizz coach, he said, even with the professionals, you can't yell at them anymore.
Yeah.
Back when I was a kid, we were used to it. You know, that wasn't a big thing, but kids don't want to be yelled at anymore.
Yeah.
They want to be taught.
So true.
Yeah.
So true.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And teach them and show them and let them play.
Like, I think, because we learned different, right? We learned, I got yelled at all the time because I always screwed things up. But, you know, eventually I'm the only guy that's still there with the gear. Yeah. I still, but it's different. And I learned as a coach, and I never yelled. I wasn't I remember twice yelling at a player in 17 years of coaching. I can remember both times I yelled at a player. And both times I immediately went, that was wrong, and that was stupid. Why did I just do that? Like, anytime emotion comes out of your mouth, you lose, right?
Yeah.
That's a bad idea. But in the 70s and 80s, that's how it was done.
That's exactly how it was
done. And Kevin McClelland, who's coaching with the AAA team that we have here, Rocky Mountain Renegades now, right? He's a yeller, but it's the way he yells still works.
Yeah.
And I just got to tell people that too, because my son played juniors for him or whatever they were coaching him that year, AAA midgets. And he would yell, and some of the kids on the team would just laugh a little bit. Because it's different. We had other coaches here that would yell and demoralize kids.
Yeah, exactly.
But some, so I guess I'm just saying, yelling is doesn't work all the time, but that guy's still got it. Like, I don't know how he yells it, but he still has it. So, but yeah, so it's different now, right?
Instead of yelling.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's like you said, demoralizing a kid. I think that's the, if you're singling out a kid because of a game or because of a mistake, you know, you can yell at a team. Like, that's totally acceptable. Like, the team's not playing, they're not working, you got to get them going somehow.
Yeah. You go Letterkenny and kick the
garbage can. Single out a kid to that extent, or you don't play a kid because of a mistake, that just crushes a kid and his confidence level drops, and then his play level is going to drop dramatically.
Right.
As soon as his confidence is gone.
Well, I remember I was doing something that I was taught to do when I was coaching. I would go back and teach at the Shattuck St. Mary thing, and they J.P. Parisi would, I would get a group of kids and I'd be like, okay, if you miss the net, 10 push-ups. And J.P. saw me do that. He goes, no. And I'm like, what do you mean no? He's like, no. And I can't do that. I'm not going to try to imitate his French accent, but he'd be like, basically, I want them to shoot top corner. I want them to shoot and I want them to try. I want them to do stuff that's outside their comfort zone. And if they miss, they're going to try again. Yeah. If you punish them, the next time they're going to come down and shoot it right in that goalie's crest.
Yep.
So that he doesn't have to shoot again.
Yeah.
And he's like, same thing with these goalies or these players. Don't tell them to chip it off the boards. Let them see what they can do. Like, let's figure it out. And if they mess up, they'll figure it out the next time. Let them just keep trying. Until you're getting paid to play, you know, we've talked about this on this show a lot. We have a lot of parents that are like, win, win, win at all costs. No, you got to have fun, man. You got to keep the passion.
Yeah, that's the number one for any of the kids.
And that's, once I learned it and figured it out, I would tell my counselors at the beginning of every camp that I did here, I'm like, all I care about is I want there to be some structure. I want you to teach these kids to be better than they were when they got here, and do not take anything away from them. Do not put out the passion. Like, keep that fire going.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. That's what we tell our 12U team, you know, in every talk, it's always have fun in there. It's always because you want the kids to have fun, ultimately, you know. Go out, work hard, but have fun doing it.
You know? Yeah, if they're working hard, they're going to have fun.
Yeah.
If they're not working hard, they're not going to feel like they're part of it.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Gary, do you have anything else?
I don't think so. I do want to come see your team play. I mean, I see you at the rink all the time, but... I've seen a few shifts in like Vegas a couple of times.
Yeah,
but I got to see some of these players.
And you're coaching U18 Grizzlies.
Yeah, U18 Grizz. Yep.
Would you ever be interested in like being a pro coach? Like,
oh yeah, I love coaching. I've always I remember the Canadian Olympic team. I had a chance to play there, and I didn't actually go because finances and stuff. I was lose a ton of money to go play there, so I didn't. But I remember him telling me just when I was a player, he goes, you're smart enough to know this game. He goes, you should coach.
Yeah.
You know, and as I've been doing it with the kids and stuff, it'd be a blast. I'd love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's something you can just see it with you. I've seen you coach, and I've when I was starting my camps here, I'm like, these guys I need to get. And I would harass you and you'd be like, I'm not coaching. Like, you were the guy we watched growing up. You were the guy that we were always told to be like. I think a guy like you is, I'm so grateful that you're coaching kids, and I'd love to see you coach pro. And I'd love to see, like, I think you, the game needs you back is what I'm saying, I guess. And I don't know. It's just fun. I've learned so much, even just playing men's league with you or being around you or listening to you coach. I've learned a lot from you, and I think I'm just so grateful that there's guys like you in the market still. Our kids need it.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
All right. So I know we went long. I wanted to talk more about like with the actual Grizzlies, and I wanted to kind of dive into a little bit more stuff, but we try to keep these episodes a little under an hour, and we went. But We'd love to have you back on. We'd love to have you come in and guest host.
Do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come in and talk, man. You have so much hockey knowledge, and then there's just me and Gary in here. And we just, well, Josh, our producer.
Yeah, let's not forget him.
Well, I didn't forget him, but he just doesn't.
Talk.
Yeah. And I've tried to get him to talk on some episodes before. All he ever tells me to do is cut. Stop. Yeah,
he's just pointing.
Yeah. But when it comes to hockey, I'd love to have, like, if you have time, we can even schedule him around your time and just have you come in. And did you know, were you friends with Fleury? Did you play when he was here?
Yeah. Yeah. I played here. He came down for the 10 games for the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. And said this, like, it's so crazy to think of how many games he played here.
Yeah.
And, like, there are tons of kids here named Theron.
Yeah.
And, like, he set this market upside down.
Yeah.
He really helped grow hockey here. When we have him on, will you come on and will you talk to him with us? Will you be one of our hosts?
Yeah, sure. I could do that.
I think it'd be fun. Like, yeah, I think it'd be awesome.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Because Brian Patafi's setting that up for us. And he's entertaining.
That's entertaining.
He's a
right
stand-up
there.
Comedian now. He's retired from hockey. He's a stand-up comedian.
So Brian Patafi was my first trainer in pro?
Yeah.
He used to cut my hair and everything.
Oh,
yeah. Wow. It was like in Moncton, New Brunswick, there was no place to go. So the trainer did everything.
Wow.
That's awesome.
A little dangerous.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. Well, I guess that's it. I have a million other things I wanted to talk about, but I know we're out of time. So
write them down for next time.
I have them on my computer right here.
Oh, great.
Okay. So you'll come back.
Yeah.
And we'll have you in. All right. Well, Kevin Guy, we really appreciate you being on the show. Like I said, you were top five that we wanted to have on the show and just hear your story. And you had a huge impact on this market too. So it's cool to finally get you in here and tell your story. And I know the people that follow the Eagles are going to be glad to hear from you.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Thanks for everything you've done.
Thank you.
We got more episodes coming up. And Gary, you're going to be here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll just schedule them around your schedule too.
Let's make it happen.
I have lots of days off. Josh is the hard one. Our producer's the one that's like, none of us know how to turn anything on.
Yeah. What's this do?
Well, you know how to get. We could just get back on. We could just take over the arrow.
Go over there.
Let's do that. All right.
Where's the reel-to-reel machine?
I'm going to stop dinking around. For everybody here, Josh, thanks for being our producer. I know we used to have a thing where we thanked you, and we don't play that part anymore, but download this podcast. Subscribe to it everywhere you get podcasts on Google, Apple, Amazon, zippity-doo-dah, whatever.
Yeah.
But it's there. That's just good. Get it. We were just teaching Kevin how to get podcasts.
Yeah.
And that's it for the Utah Puck Report.